Are you ready to realize the true potential in your life and help others do the same? Get equipped to create a thriving future with the Secrets of Success podcast. Inspire others to live, lead, and work on purpose, and experience the joy of watching satisfaction and productivity come to life. And now, here's your host, Dr. Ken Keyes.
Welcome to Secrets of Success podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ken Keyes. Well, we had a chance the last couple of sessions to talk to you about The Quest for Purpose, my new book about how to find it and to live it. In the first two podcasts, the sessions that we did, I really talked to you about the beginning part where we have self-awareness, all the critical components, meaning before purpose, before we get into this purpose question. In part two, I was talking about a lot of areas that many purpose books never really get cover, and that is around characteristics and mindset. And so if you really want to learn more detail about that, go back to those first two podcasts if this is your first one that you're listening to. And really I want to continue in part three about four critical components or areas that we want to measure to be able to help live our life on purpose. You know, the question when we talk about purpose and when we ask the question to individuals, what's your life purpose? A lot of times the question's just too big. It's too overwhelming. It is not something that people answer easily without some thought and some reflection. So what I've done in the book and what I'm going to talk about today is really four areas that we ask you to really do an assessment or complete an assessment to contribute a puzzle piece to your life picture and to the solution or provide solutions or answers to what's most important to you. So let me just quickly and immediately get into that so that we can add value to it. Now, each one of these areas could be several hours in the podcast, and I do a 3-day certification training where we go in depth into each one of these areas. But I wanted to briefly mention them as part of what we call part two of The Quest for Purpose and where this fits into your process. So we talk about four areas that you want to be able to get clear about what's important to you or what's your orientation. And the first one is your personal style. Now, Consulting Resource Group was founded in 1979 by Dr. Terry Anderson. And the main reason that the company was created is because we didn't like other assessment tools like DISC or Myers-Briggs or True Colors or some of these many other assessments out there, because they really don't honor the individual. And so what I'm suggesting in the book is that you would complete our personal style indicator. So first of all, what is personal style? Many other people call it personality. We call it something a little bit different for us because personality in our model is the totality of who you are. But personal style is, in our definition, is your natural predisposition to perceive, approach, and interact with the environment, which includes time, people, tasks, and situations. So if you think about some friends that you have, I mean, are there some individuals that you know that no matter what, they are always late? And are there some individuals you know that no matter what, they always seem to be on time? And so these are natural orientations. So people ask this question, are we, and I mentioned it in the last podcast, are we nature and are we nurture? Well, the reality is we're both. And we believe that personal style is your nature, what you are born with, is that you are born with preferences that predisposes you to certain orientations, certain things that fit who you are, certain ways that you see life and see the world and want to do things. And if you don't include personal style as part of your decision-making process, that you're not aware what your personal style is that you are severely hindered in your ability to be successful. The reality is there was an independent study by TalentSmart, and TalentSmart said, if people don't know their style, what percentage of individuals will realize their potential or fulfill their potential if they don't understand this concept or this information? And they said a mere 2% will realize their potential as far as understanding their personal style. It is critical, it's important, it's non-negotiable. So I just encourage you that you could go online, complete the online personal style indicator, and here's what it's going to do for you. It's really going to help you to understand, what are my natural strengths as a style? What are some natural weaknesses or challenges? What's my orientation towards teams, towards leadership, towards stress? And what might I need to do to be able to be effective with people who are different than me? I mean, those of you that have partners or significant others, we all know that there are some things that other people do that kind of rub us the wrong way. And it could be different and unique for every single person that's listening to this. The other thing, and I have a very long sort of white paper and video that I've done about the uniqueness of the personal style indicator. But one of the things is that 90% of us are a blend of the different dimensions that are out there, the different sort of types that people talk about. And the reality is it's how that blend comes together, which is unique for you, and we'll give you a full report about what your blend or your pattern and what that means to you and what you can do about it. And now you can act intentionally because we believe your personal style will not change throughout your lifetime. It's an anchor point, it's a base, it's a foundation that you can base or operate your life from, rather than this sort of neurotic state where if this is not true, then the reality is that every single person listening to this podcast, to this audio recording, is that you will be a different person tomorrow morning. In other words, you can't count on you being you. And so we know that personal style is real. We know that personal style is measurable. And we know that personal style, your personal style, has impact in the environment, but it also is critically important that you understand it so that you can realize your purpose. Because what we have found is that 90% of individuals dislike their work, from mildly irritated to loathe. And we believe one of the contributing reasons for this is that people do not know what their personal style is and how that links to the nature and the style of a position. You know, we've created a unique tool called the Job Style Indicator, where we talk about the compatibility, the style compatibility between a position and a person. And so that is critically important if you're going to sustain engagement in anything you do in life. And, you know, I want to be able to make intentional decisions. You want to make intentional decisions about the roles, responsibilities, the nature of sort of my environment that best suits my strengths. Developing your weaknesses is highly overrated. We want you to play to your strengths. Yes, we need to acknowledge our weaknesses. Because the flip side of this is that all of us will be required to work with, to interact with, to sell to support, have customer service with individuals who are different than us. And so in that case, then I need to style shift. Then I need to be able to serve individuals who have different needs than me. And what if I don't know what those are? What if I just kind of assume that everybody sees the world through my eyes? And that's where the personal style indicator will help you in all components of your life. I mean, I can't even imagine and fathom operating without that information. My family, my kids, everybody else around me have embraced that as part of a critical part of understanding themselves and being intentional in life. So that's number one, personal style. Number two, which is a tool that we've developed, which is a sister tool of personal style indicator, is the values preference indicator. In the chapter in the book, it's called, What Do You Really Value? You know, a lot of time, nobody ever pushes back when we do what we call values-based workshops. Because everybody is aware of, you know, what are your values as far as the concept of it. But here's the reality. The majority of individuals have not confirmed what their values are. Now, in our tool, in what is talked about in the book, is what we call behavioral values versus contextual values. And what we mean by that, what are the internal motivators? What are the internal needs as well as fears that drive you, which are important to you? And with today's life, with the fact that there's over 40,000 job titles, with there's so much information coming our way where information is doubling every 12 to 24 months, whatever research that you read, there's no way to keep up with the opportunities. So I make a statement in our seminars that there are no way can we all be equipped to make situational decisions. We're just overwhelmed with input. But what would it mean if you could all make a values-based decision? So what I ask you to do in the book is to clarify and to verify, using the values preference indicator, what are your core behavioral values? These are internal needs that you need to have presence to feel fulfilled, to feel engaged, to feel alive. It's not saying that you don't have other values, but these are the priorities. So an example, my number one value is spirituality, but my second most important value is independence. So all of my life, I've owned my own businesses or worked in a role or responsibility where I had a lot of independence. If I was in a situation where I was being micromanaged, I would not feel fulfilled. So when I was in a sales role, I was on the road, I would have a sales meeting on Mondays, and as long as I got results and was operating in an ethical and a way of an or a business integrity, then my sales manager never gave me any kind of second glance or talked to me. The same thing is when I worked with another job where I was an independent sort of inspector for the Federal Department of Agriculture, and I talked to my supervisor on the phone a couple of times a month. That was about it. Otherwise, I would just, here's my job, go do it. And now really owning my own companies for the last 35 years in some form or another. The reality is that I'm wired that way. And when we think about the needs and fears in our values list, my number one need is really to be in control of my own space. Not to control others, but to control my own space. And then when we have a list of 21 different values. And so what does it mean to you? And what are those core values that are important to you? And if you can't list them right now, then how could you possibly make values-based decisions? You know, it is one of the most powerful, equipping kind of processes that you could ever do, is to get clear about what the values are to you and then start making values-based decisions where you take those core values, whatever those top 4, 5, 6, 7 are, and you filter decisions in engagement in processes through these values. An example is a couple of my other values are challenge and responsibility. So do I take a project on? Do I take a contract on? And I look at my values of responsibility and challenge and independence. And are those values represented in that opportunity? And if they're not, I know long term that my engagement is not going to be there, and I'm not going to be able to sustain my interest. Now, the opposite side is true, where a true story, and it's in my book, Why Aren't You More Like Me? And I think I mentioned it in The Quest for Purpose briefly, is that I had an organization that had a 400% turnover in their employee group. That employee group was hiring individuals with the value of tranquility. Well, what the employer was doing, the positions that he was filling was a credit collection department. Well, you imagine credit collections is always about conflict. And what the manager wanted to do, his vision was, is he wanted to create a credit collection department that was the nicest in the country. But one of the number one needs of individuals who want tranquility is their need is that they don't want conflict. So the reason for the 400% turnover is that conflict was actually biophysically affecting those individuals, and they were actually sick to their stomach. They were ill. They were unable to sustain their engagement in the position. And so I went in, did some consulting, helped the manager to understand that even though he was well-meaning in hiring people with tranquility that loved harmony, the role, the responsibilities, every call was about conflict. And they biophysically could not tolerate or handle that much conflict every single day. And that's why his turnover was 400%. So when we switched the model, when we switched and said, listen, you can train niceness, you can set that up as part of a role or responsibility, we were able to lower the turnover from 400% to just 40% in 90 days. So very, very quickly, by doing a values-based hire, and then over the years, it improved from there. And I don't know at this point what that is, but it's certainly a way better situation at 40% than it was at 400%. So be able to identify, what are your core values? Are you making the decisions around those values? And the other exercise and activity that's in the book for you is that, what are the things that you would have to do to make sure that each one of these values was being met? If it was friendship, if it was challenge, if it's responsibility. And if that value is being met for you right now, what is it that you're doing that you need to continue to do? And even how a value is met is unique and proprietary to each individual listening. So what might meet my need for friendship might be completely different for you for friendship. And so that is part of that process, that if you don't identify it, you won't know. And then once you've identified the value, then what are the steps you need to put in place so that it is fulfilled and you make values-based decision? One of the most powerful things that you will ever do. Well, one of the next steps, so we have personal style. The next one is the online values preference indicator. The third assessment that we ask and suggest that you would complete is the stress indicator and health planner. You know, I travel a lot as a wellness expert, as well as a leadership expert, as well as a purpose expert. And it's interesting, you know, it doesn't matter if you have the purpose all figured out. It doesn't matter if you know exactly the direction that you're going to go, if you're sick and ill all the time, or even, you know, heaven forbid that you have a terminal illness. And what's happened now in the developed world, and I'm sorry, I'm just going to be a rant here for a little bit because I could have about a 6-hour podcast and we'll have a wellness month coming up, is our wellness and our health has never been poorer in the developed world as well as the developing world as it is right now. I have to take responsibility for our wellness and our health levels. Is, you know, so what if I know what my purpose is, if I'm sick all the time? So what if I know my purpose is if I have an illness or I can't enjoy it or if I have no energy? And so as part of this purpose process, we ask you to complete the stress indicator and health planner. It has 120 questions in it and identifies 5 separate areas, talking about distress, meaning stress manifests ourselves in our body and physical, behavioral, biological ways that we want to be able to, psychological ways, and we want to be able to measure that, such as headaches or anxiety attacks, these items. The second item in there is interpersonal. So our clients that have used the Stress Indicator and Health Planner over many years really have seen the benefit that we have so many questions that you're able to target very specifically what are the areas that are affecting or contributing to my high levels of stress, if any. So you can very quickly get a sense of what could be contributing to it. So the second part is interpersonal stress. So what about the relationships, both at work and at home and personally, and which ones and what kind of relationships might be stressing you? Number 3 in the list is what we call our wellness component, both nutritional as well as lifestyle. Now, here's something that might even shock you, is that the World Health Organization has now documented through research that 90 to 95% of illness is lifestyle related. And this includes heart attacks, diabetes, cancer, fatty liver disease, all these diseases, which is not like a car accident where I fall and I break my leg, but these illnesses are lifestyle related, both from a lifestyle, meaning activity, from a nutritional and my intake and my food, and then also my mindset, is that if I have a polluted, toxic mindset, which we talked about in the first podcast around characteristics and just sort of the meaning of life, if I have no meaning, if I'm kind of always in anxiety, then that is going to be toxic to me and it's going to affect my immunity system. So when we think about, and the chapter in the book's called Dying to Live, is that we need to take care of our wellness level. You know, there was a research study done with a group of high school students in Canada who were really struggling cognitively and behaviorally in school. And what they did is they put a small gym beside this class, a small class of students. They discovered within 6 months of them working out on a regular basis, every day, activity, getting sort of the adrenaline glands glowing, getting the hormones going in their body rather than sitting all the time and playing video games, is they were on average able to increase their GPA by 1.0 just by including fitness. So I'm just going to briefly talk about some wellness items for you. Right now, as I mentioned before, 75% or so of North Americans are overweight or obese. 1 out of 2 will have diabetes in their lifetimes. Diabetes leads to other immediate causes of death or loss of limbs or loss of circulation or loss of eyesight. I mean, the list goes on. And so we need to really look at what we're putting into our bodies. What you eat does matter. All the food that's in the center of any grocery store, you just need to avoid it. Any processed foods, there's not even food, it's pretend food, it's imitation food. You know, if it's live food, if it's got a label on it, then it's not really real food. So if I've got a banana, there's usually not a label as saying what's in it. It's just a banana, or if it's peppers, or if it's some kind of kale or spinach. And so I'm just going to suggest to you that the majority of your diet needs to be vegetable-based, 75% plus, then fruits, then nuts, then some lean protein if you're into that. And if you're a vegan, fine, go for it. If you're not, then lean proteins. And the last thing, and in fact, there's a real debate, and I'm going to state as an expert here, there's some doctors that argue, nutritionists that argue that you need grains. You do not need grains in your diet to have a healthy, balanced sort of nutritional mix. And the reality is that as long as food is raw, and as long as food is in its original state, we have all kinds of indigenous peoples all around the world that have all kinds of different diets, and they're very healthy. They don't have this illness. They don't have this cancer rate. They don't have diabetes. Because one of the number one things you need to avoid in all forms is sugar or fructose corn syrup, which is just disaster for the liver because it doesn't break it down in the system, and it's all kinds of pressure on your liver. So when you look at all the consumptions, is right now they're estimating about 150 pounds or 60 kilos plus or minus of processed sugar that every individual in North America consumes. The five most unhealthy countries in the world now are the UK, Canada, United States, Mexico, and Australia. And so we see that now, where now mobility and really quality of life is being affected by everybody who is just not healthy. Aspartame or diet colas affect our cognitive abilities, and they actually burn and destroys brain cells. And, you know, take it from somebody who was addicted to Diet Coke. And zero calories does not mean that it's not going to affect your metabolic rate. So all white flour, all white bread, all gone. If you need to have some other carbs, maybe some brown rice. And gluten-free is also important, but don't go to gluten-free that is all refined carbs as well. So make it plant-based. Stay focused there. Do whatever it is, lentils, beans, all the proteins that come into that, as well as your fruits and nuts, you know, walnuts or almonds, all these other healthy nuts. Some high quality protein if it's salmon, or if you want to go again to a plant base, there's lots of protein in kale as well. And then very limited amounts of dairy and no grain if you can avoid it. And when the doctors say that you won't have a balanced diet without it, they are not reading the research. But I'm sorry, that's just the reality of it. Now, finally, let's just go into, you know, as far as the other couple items, we talk about time stress. And a lot of times in this world now is that we don't build any margins. You don't build any time for you to be able to kind of respond just quietly to things or to really relax. And I know for me, growing up on a dairy farm, I really never had any time off. My parents' claim to fame was that they worked 13 years without a day off, and they thought that I should be the same way. So being able to take some time. And the question I have for everybody that's listening here, who's in charge of your schedule? Is it you or is it somebody else? You know, in the end, we're the ones that have to take responsibility for how we've crowded our space. If you book your whole life to the minute, if everything works out perfectly, you've created unnecessary stress. I know a friend of mine who does very, very well. Thank you very much. Probably earns multiple seven figures per year. He tries to work 25 hours a week if he can. And, you know, I'm joking about that, but really he set it up. He says, why do I have to need to work 60 or 80? He says, I'm a values-based consultant and I'm able to work, you know, 25, 30 hours a week and be able to get all the things done that I need to get done. So there's different ways to do it. The other thing I want to really challenge those of you that are younger or those of you that are parents or grandparents or uncles and aunts that know about younger children. We now have put enormous stress on young people because we have scheduled them with no free time, no space. So the 8, the 9, the 10, the 11, the 12-year-old, they're going to like 3 sports games. They're going to dance. They're going to music. They're going to youth groups, whatever it is. And there is no space for them. This is a kind of like hang. Now, I know the opposite is true where some kids have nothing to do outside of it. That's not what I'm talking about. But if we are scheduling every nanosecond, then we're creating undue stress for them. And then finally, one of the stressors is what we call work, ergonomics. Are you working in the right environment? Maybe you're doing the right things, but working for the wrong company as far as the culture. And so we have a series of questions there about what needs to be in place for you to be able to feel fulfilled work-wise, as well as ergonomics too. Means standing. You know, they say now that sitting is one of the new smoking items. So can I stand up? Can I have a standing desk? All these little things that integrate sort of lifestyle with the work environment. You know, am I in a workplace that really challenges, again, my purpose? And that's the whole purpose of these podcasts, this series of four, is to be able to get you get connected to your purpose. And this is one component to it. You know, so I encourage you, go online, take the Stress Indicator and Health Planner, find out what your stress levels are in these different areas, and then act on it. Take responsibility. Don't be a victim of your circumstances. Don't fall for sort of the processed foods. And by the way, just a sidebar, is processed foods are made to be addictive. And so until you get rid of that addiction, I mean, science has mastered, you know, the smell, the taste, all the things that work with your brain to be able to kind of have this addictive sort of cocaine thing, where that's what carbs and sugars will do to you. It's very similar to a cocaine high by the sugars and the processed carbs that are in our system. And then finally, the last assessment that we have in the assessment section of the Quest for Purpose is, are you worthy? You know, and that is part of our self-worth inventory. You know, we believe in self, what we call situational self-worth. A lot of times, and maybe you know some people, maybe it's you, and it certainly was me when I was younger, is that sometimes we undermine our success, we undermine our purpose, we undermine our direction, because we don't believe that we're worthy of something better. Maybe our background just kind of put us down as far as the family around us, or you know, when I was growing up, and I love my father, and he might not ever hear this, but, you know, as a verbal individual, I'm kind of balanced, both verbal and nonverbal, but I always spoke out. I always spoke my mind. I always spoke my opinions. As my dad would say to me, so, you know, kids are to be seen, not heard, right? Or, you know, you talk too much. Well, now I've kind of gotten even, because I actually talk or communicate both in the written and the spoken form for a living. And so what if we've been put down when we were younger for who we are, for the uniqueness that we have been created for to be able, and as I mentioned in the very first podcast, I believe that every single person has been put here for a purpose, and every single person has an assignment and has a responsibility to fulfill that assignment. And so that assignment is unique to you. At the same time, I need to have the courage to step out to it. You know, growing up on the dairy farm, I was the first born male, third generation Eastern European descent. And so when I came back from agricultural college, there was just enormous pressure, psychological pressure, as well as sort of family pressure, societal pressure, for me to stay on the farm. Now, I love my dad, but we really didn't work well together. There was two people that were trying to be in charge. In 2.5 years, I left. And of course, my family said, you know, we did all of this for you, but you really betrayed us. So there's a lot of societal pressures for us to go down certain directions. And we believe, as I mentioned earlier, of situational self-worth. So you could have high self-worth at home, but not high at work, or high at work and not at home. Maybe your projected self, meaning you don't think you're worthy of something more than you have right now. You say, well, I don't know if I can do it. And we've all met individuals. Maybe it's not you, but we've met individuals where they discount their worth, but we know they can do it. But for whatever reason, whatever background or emotional anchor or traumatic events that have occurred, they don't think they can do it. But we know by on the outside looking in that they can. So I just want to encourage everybody listening to this that you are worthy of the path that you feel inspired to follow. I mean, who am I to be able to be this expert, this leadership expert, this wellness expert, this purpose expert of somebody who grew up in the dairy farm where, I mean, I knew about cattle, I knew that space. But I needed to give myself permission to step out of that, what I knew from sort of growing up, into a new space for the last three decades to say this is where I was supposed to be. I've always known in some form or another, even when I was 14 and 15 and 16 years of age, that I was here to encourage and inspire others to realize their potential. But I needed to act on it. When I was nearly 30 years old before I acted on it, I was just held back or holding myself back of not taking the step because I was fearful of, maybe it was the fear of failure, which I talked about in the last podcast, or the fear of approval, or again, are you worthy, Ken, of that kind of responsibility, of being an expert, of being able to hold and encourage people's lives? What an amazing opportunity, but also what an amazing responsibility. And so I just want to encourage you that the self-worth inventory really helps to identify maybe there's some background that's come into play that's hindering your confidence to move forward. If you don't have the confidence, maybe there's a good friend around you that you could talk to that would be able to encourage you. Maybe there's a mastermind group. Maybe there's a coach. Maybe there's a counselor. It's so that you would go seek the input that would allow you, that would help you to be able to realize your potential and that you are worthy. Not from an arrogant point of view. Not that you're better than somebody else. I mean, egocentric individuals are irritating, aren't they? It's really from a self-honoring point of view. And it's from this space of honoring, this space of realizing your potential, that you're going to be able to contribute at the highest level to society, that you're going to have the greatest amount of impact, that you're going to have the greatest amount of fulfillment. So, I mean, there are four things that I talked about today, which are critically important for this quest for purpose. You know, understand your personal style, know what it is, know what others people's are so that you can build relationships. And you know what? In this lifetime, you will not realize your potential unless you can work those relationships. Number two, know what your values are. Make values-based decisions rather than situational-based decisions. Number three, take responsibility for your wellness and your health and stress levels so that you really come to the table with this vibrant energy that is just contagious. And number four, be aware of what your self-worth levels are in all areas of your life that you can contribute the highest at home, at work, with your friends, with peers, and you're projecting into the future that you're a confident individual that's going to make a difference. You know, we're going to finish this four-part series in our next podcast, Secrets of Success, and really bring together all the different components that are in the quest for purpose so that you, or maybe you're coaching others, will be able to find out what their purpose is and be able to live it and really make a difference. I'm Dr. Ken Keyes, and I thank you for listening to the Secrets of Success podcast.
Thanks for exploring the secrets of success with us. If you want to keep the momentum going, log on to crgleader.com. Scroll to the bottom and sign up for our inspirational emails. You can also take your success to the next level by following us on Facebook and Twitter and connecting with Ken on LinkedIn. We hope you have a great week and look forward to you joining us next time for the Secrets of Success podcast with Dr. Ken Keyes.